Today on Straight Talk Africa, presidential term limits and the politics of succession in Africa. The quest for another term cost Burkina Faso's Blaise Compaoré his presidency and has triggered a political crisis in Burundi. Critics say some of today's African rulers believe they alone have the vision thing to guide their nations to the promised land. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. It's Wednesday, June 24th. I am Shaka Sali.
Well, hello to you, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll talk about term limits and the politics of succession in Africa.
And coming up later in our STA inbox, we'll share your thoughts on the topic through your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments. Hope you'll stay with us.
But first, according to recent major public opinion surveys, the vast majority of African people support presidential term limits. But many leaders on the continent do not respect the concerns of their citizens or see the far-reaching political consequences of imposing themselves on their people. My colleague, Paul Sisco, has more.
The constitutions of many African countries mandate limits of two presidential terms, usually of 4 or 5 years in length. The presidents of Algeria, Chad, Sudan, Gambia, Uganda, Congo-Brazzaville, and Eritrea have all served for more than 15 years. The leaders of Angola, Cameroon, and Zimbabwe have all ruled for over 30 years. Africa's longest-serving president, Teodoro Obiang of Equatorial Guinea, will mark 36 years at the helm of that country in August. Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe, speaking recently to the African Union in Johannesburg, says the two-term limit is too restrictive.
We put a yoke on around our necks. We said each leaders must have only two terms. In Europe, they haven't said that. In America, because they are vast, it's a vast country. Yes, that's where they have two terms. But in Europe, no. It's democracy. If the people still want a leader, let the leader continue. But when we have served two terms, we have not done much. And two terms was like 2 weeks. So we want to go more. So you want another term and you must find an excuse.
Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza's persistent interest in running for a third term has brought violence to his streets and worldwide condemnation. Challenging constitutional term limits forced Burkina Faso's President Blaise Compaoré from office in October 2014. Earlier this year, efforts to formally limit leaders of the Economic Community of West African States to two terms failed, in part because the longstanding presidents of Togo and the Gambia opposed the measure. Opposition groups in the Democratic Republic of Congo fear that President Joseph Kabila may be leaning towards seeking an unconstitutional third term in elections scheduled for 2016. Rwanda's President Paul Kagame is also refusing to rule out a run for another term when his mandate expires in 2017. And Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni has been in power since 1986. He had the Ugandan parliament dispose of term limits a decade ago. The 70-year-old leader is now poised to run for a fifth term in February 2016. Paul Sisco, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. Now joining us here in our Washington studios are two distinguished guests. Amama Mbabazi is a former Ugandan prime minister who recently declared his intention to seek the Ugandan presidency under the ruling National Resistance Movement, or the NRM. Well, I have to say frankly that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa for the first time, by the way.
Thank you very much, my brother Shaka. It's my great pleasure and honor to be here today.
You're most welcome, sir.
Thank you.
And Ambassador Herman J. Cohen, former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs from 1989 to 1993, is currently the president and co-founder of Cohen and Woods International, a consulting firm that assists U.S. business in Africa. He recently authored a book entitled The Mind of the African Strong Man, Conversations with Dictators, Statesmen, and Further Figures. Well, Ambassador Cohen, you're most welcome, of course, once again on Straight Talk Africa.
Pleasure to be here.
It's always a pleasure, of course, hosting you. And by the way, congratulations for this important masterpiece of a book.
Thank you very much.
You're most welcome, sir. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. The US country code is 1. Well, let me come to you immediately, Amama Mbabazi. I have to tell you, frankly, that as far as I'm concerned, this program is rather historic in the sense that if you walk back in memory lane, I remember meeting a very young man in his high school primary, Kabale, southwestern Uganda.
Yes.
Do you remember the same?
Yeah, I do.
And then, of course, later, Kigezi High School, Kigezi College, Butoveri. And then at one time, on a bus ride,
yes,
from Kampala to Rukunjiri.
That's correct.
And now we are right here on another bus ride in Washington, D.C., of all places.
Yes.
How does it feel for you?
Well, it's been a long ride, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And I want to congratulate you, particularly my brother, on your achievements. Because it's true, we were at school together, and then Shaka abandoned school. He went to the army.
The military.
To the military.
Became a paratrooper.
Yes, became a paratrooper. And that bus ride was very important because we discussed his future.
Correct.
Whether it lay in the military or elsewhere. And I was very delighted that he took up the advice, went to school, and he's a distinguished African and world figure. Congratulations.
Well, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled for your compliments and support.
You're welcome.
And I have to say, as far as you're concerned, me too, in as far as your success is concerned, the feeling is mutual.
Thank you.
Now, let's go to the business on hand. We're talking about term limits. Mm. There is a survey, of course, as you have seen, which, frankly, suggests that a vast majority of the African people support term limits. Any particular reason why a lot of African leaders are not on the same page with most of their people?
Well, as you may know, my brother Shaka, I have been, I would say, one of the chief proponents of no term limits. And the reasons were strong, and I think they still remain strong.
Mm-hmm.
And in summary, the reasons are that Africa, the history of Africa, is replete with failure.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at slave trade, our people stayed in slavery for 300 years. What did the African leaders do to stop it?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't stop it. Instead, they participated in it because they hunted their subjects and sold them into slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Poor leadership. Eventually, we were colonized directly. Why didn't we successfully resist colonization?
Mm-hmm.
Poor leadership, with the exception of Ethiopia. Even after independence, you know our history. Idi Amin in Uganda and other, I don't want to mention other leaders,
mm-hmm,
for obvious reasons, but Uganda is a good example. Poor leaders. So the argument that when you get good leaders, you should not, just get rid of them like that, is not a weak argument in the context of that history. However, of course, on the other hand, normally these leaders who become strong come from a background of almost oblivion. They are not known until they come up and they become great leaders. So if you came out of nowhere and you became a great leader, why on earth would you imagine that someone else will not come in similar circumstances and be a great leader? That's a very important question.
That's very interesting. I personally don't think that I have a problem, frankly, in as far as term limits is concerned, because there are some examples of leaders who have been very exceptionally unique. I mean, you can talk about Lee Kuan Yew and his Singapore. The man was in power for 31 years, and he was able to develop his country, which was really backwater, third world, until it became a first world. But these are very unique individuals, and in fact, he was not a president. He was a prime minister operating under a system of parliamentary systems.
Yes.
Parliamentary democracy suggests that the party that wins, or a coalition an alliance of parties that form a government, can actually appoint a leader. But when it comes to a president, really, and especially when we come to our country, Uganda, where I remember when I was a graduate student at UCLA in California, I was a Ford Foundation fellow doing research in Tanzania, in Dar es Salaam, when a young man by the name President Yoweri Museveni was sworn in power on January 29th, 1986. I was one of those many people who were so happy, so inspired, especially by what he said. He said that the problems of Africa is not about the African people, really. It is rather about African leaders who overstay in power. In fact, overstay longer than 10 years. And yet, the last time I checked, Mr. President Museveni is in his 29th year, and he still wants to run for office next year. How do you react to that? Is it because he's a particularly unique individual, as you have suggested in the past?
Well, I am actually not sure that talking about President Museveni makes the point, because the point is strong on its own. When you have achieved success as a leader, you see, the tendency is to believe in your own success. And I think some of our leaders, and I'm not necessarily referring to President Museveni, I actually don't like referring to individual leaders, because it's not the leader, the individual, that matters. It's the idea, the principle. And that's what I would like to address.
Right.
If someone remains in power, this happened in Britain, even where you don't have term limits, in the case of Margaret Thatcher, or even Tony Blair, for that matter.
10+ years.
Yes, where they stayed for a long period in power, and you could see by their conduct, by the way they took decisions, by the way they related to their colleagues, that that success had entered their mind and influenced their actions. And sometimes this has a tendency of making leadership derailed from the original principles. This is a fact.
I see. Well, now we'll pause for a short break, and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Third Term or VOA Term Limits. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa. Become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
Let's take a look at presidential term limits in some parts of Africa. We'll start in Burundi, where in 2014, the country's president, Pierre Nkurunziza, failed to get enough votes in parliament to revise the term limit restrictions in the constitution. But the nation's constitutional court ruled in May that he's allowed to run for a third term in July. Rwanda's President Paul Kagame is poised to run for a third term in 2017. That's amid rumors that 11.6 million people were forced to sign a petition urging parliament to change the presidential term limit clause in the constitution. In Togo, despite strong opposition, the country's president, Faure Gnassingbé, has refused to implement political reforms leading to a presidential term limit. He was re-elected to a third term in April.
I wanted to present music and a side of American culture that is most important to me, that is a part of who I am. They're going to get some incredible performances. That's one of the things I love, bringing these artists in so you can get to see them do what they do. It's soul music, and that's what music is. It's that which comes from the soul.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githiu Ewart, and this is Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. Let me come to you, Ambassador Cohen. Of course, you listened to your fellow panelist. To what extent do you agree with his analysis here, especially when you compare and contrast the presidential system with parliamentary system, where you have a prime minister who doesn't run really for national office, but it's a party that does that, and the party eventually appoints the person to become a prime minister. Moreover, when you compare some of these advanced Western nations, you're talking about societies, really, where people are highly educated, socially and politically aware to such a degree that if they get tired of the person, for example, in number 10 Downing Street, they will definitely vote him out. You know why? Because even their elections are elections. They're not selections. They reflect the will of the people.
That's right. And I think in Europe, you have very strong party systems. So look at Margaret Thatcher. She was prime minister. She was there a fairly long time. But when the people started getting tired of her, her own party voted her out.
Exactly.
And look at South Africa. When President Mbeki started to falter, his own party voted him out. So a strong party system, it seems to me, is just as important as constitutional elements. But you mentioned earlier that the African people want term limits, according to polls.
Correct.
Well, I studied some of the constitutions before coming here, and I looked at the Rwanda constitution, and it says, under no circumstances can a president serve more than two terms. Now, that's very strong language. And the constitution also says the constitution may not be revised to change the terms of a president. And it's the same thing in the Congo-Brazzaville and Congo-Kinshasa. This constitution cannot be revised to change the term. And what bothers us in the United States is not so much how many terms people have, but when the head of state tries to change the constitution for his own benefit.
Yes.
In our country, we've changed the constitution 25 times. And when we changed it for term limits, it did not impact on the current president, who was then Harry Truman.
Mm-hmm.
It only was impacted on the following president, you see. So that's why we're encouraging Africans to have two terms, because it's good for democracy in general.
It's very interesting that you mentioned the Rwandan scenario. I'm sure you are not aware of the process underway
right.
in the capital, Kigali.
Right.
You had 3.5 million signatures, which have petitioned the Rwandan parliament, the RPF party, to change that same constitution. What about the fact that when a president goes into office, he swears to defend, protect, and preserve that most important document? Why can't the international community come out and take a position like they have taken on military coups, right, and say that if you are a president elected by the people, rightly or wrongly, under no circumstances, can you change that constitution to, in a sense, reflect your personal or political interest? If you do that, it becomes a moral equivalent of a military coup.
You're absolutely right, and I think Rwanda is a special case because of the genocidal history. But you're going to see this happen in Congo-Kinshasa. If President Kabila manipulates things so that he can stay beyond the term limit, the international community is going to react very, very strongly. I can guarantee you that.
They are talking about Congo-Kinshasa. They are basically pretty much focusing on Pierre Nkurunziza in Bujumbura like a laser beam, but they are very silent, for example, on people like Sassou Nguesso. Nobody talks about the president of Equatorial Guinea, Teodoro Obiang. Nobody talks about a lot of other presidents, frankly, Paul Biya of Cameroon and what have you. Why have these double standards?
That's a very good point, but I think the international community, when they look at a continent like Africa, they focus on unstable countries where people are suffering mainly. And Congo-Kinshasa is probably one of the worst, I think, right now. So they are going to be very strong in trying to prevent Kabila from continuing in office.
Very interesting. Let me come to you again, Amama Mbabazi. You are a freedom fighter. You supported a group under very difficult circumstances. In fact, a party that was equally supported by my own father, John Wilson Mushakamba, now the late. I remember him telling me, frankly, that he admired Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni because, in his words, he felt that he was perhaps the best thing that ever happened to Uganda since sliced bread. And I said, what do you mean? He said, because he believes in social justice. But if he were alive today, do you sincerely think that he would still be feeling the same way?
Well, you know very well how close I was to your father.
Yes.
And your father was particularly great leader in as far as we, the young people at the time, were concerned, because he was of the older generation, mm-hmm, but he quickly picked up our message,
right,
of the young people.
Right.
And he embraced it, and actually we formed the party, and he became part of it.
Correct.
Prior to that, he had been supportive of our armed struggle. James Karambuzi, who was executed together with others.
Publicly executed in 1973 in Kabale Stadium.
Yes, publicly executed.
Having been found by Amini soldiers with weapons allegedly belonging to rebel leader Yoweri Museveni of FRONASA.
That's correct. And it's true that these were our colleagues, our comrades in combat. Now, these were exceptional people, certainly. And they could see far, far ahead of people of their generation. And I think most probably if he was alive, he would still subscribe, as I do, to the core principles of our war, our revolutionary war, mm-hmm, to the core principles of the NRM, which was the successor of the various organizations we established to struggle.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know whether he would have the same mind as I do now, mm-hmm, that the president, of course, has done a great job. He led us very well in, mm-hmm, war.
Mm-hmm.
He has led us very well in peace. And we have achieved a great deal in Uganda. Mm-hmm. Uganda has really been a success story.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can talk about that, my position very clearly, which I've discussed with the president, I've written to him and told him so, is that there comes a time for change. We've done a lot of things. We've reached a level which is acknowledged by the whole world as a level that had actually not been expected of Uganda a long time ago. But now is the time to move a notch higher. We have been in leadership for nearly 30 years now. And it is inevitable that there will be a generational transition in terms of leadership. And my offer to our people is to lead that transition of leadership from our generation to the next. And I can talk about it when you give me the opportunity later on.
If the president, just suppose the Ugandan president was in fact watching this show, what would you say to him? You could look in that camera, for example, and directly address yourself to him.
Well, as I said, really, I don't think it helps to talk about individuals, and I was not particularly talking about this. You know, I've had a great relationship with the president.
There's no question about it. Yes. You are great buddies, but let's face it, and you are challenging him. And you have offered to challenge him, and frankly, from everything I have seen, he doesn't seem to be comfortable with the possibility of being challenged by a former comrade of his, a great friend of his.
I actually don't think I'm a former comrade. I think I'm still a comrade. Our friendship has endured all these wars, exile, peace, government, and I think that strong relationship still endures.
What about,
I have no doubt about it.
What about Colonel Dr. Chiza Besigye, also your comrade, really?
Yes.
He went to the bush with you. He worked very closely with you and the president. And yet, when you look at the manner in which your government, your movement, your party in power has treated him in the past, you begin to wonder what you guys were fighting for. Did you, in fact, go to the bush, as you said, to fight to restore democracy, as it were?
But I can come to that, but I wanted to answer the question you asked earlier. If I was talking to the president, I have talked to him, what would I tell him? You know, some of my colleagues have told me directly that they think the position I have taken is not proper, that it is
divisive.
It is almost treacherous. You know, I don't agree, absolutely. You see, a friend is not one who tells the other, his friend, what that other person wants to hear. Rather, the one who tells him what he ought to hear, what he needs to learn and hear. And that's my role. That's my total friendship with my elder brother, who has been my leader all this time.
Your big brother. Unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally. We have to go for a break, and when we come back, I'll give you an opportunity to complete your thought. You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Jaro. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the fantastic and quite passionate feedback we've received from our audience through social media. But now, here is our letter of the week.
Jacob Katumusumi in Kampala, Uganda, writes, "It's quite absurd how Africans claim democracy with leaders who have turned into supreme national leaders. The leaders have turned their constitutions into ceremonial documents. Africa is doomed to shading its historical map with darkness if we don't go back to the drawing board."
Like Voice of America on Facebook. follow VOA.